3. Technically, it was a branch of metamathematics, usually called metamathics. Metamathics, the investigation of the properties of realities, more correctly reality fields, intrinsically unknowable by and from our own, but whose general principles could be hazarded at. Metamathics led to everything else. It led to the places that nobody else had ever seen or heard of or previously imagined. It was like living half your life in a tiny, stuffy, warm grey box and being moderately happy in there because you knew no better, and then discovering a little hole in one corner of the box, a tiny opening which you could get a finger into and tease and pull at, so that eventually you created a tear, which led to a greater tear, which led to the box falling apart around you, so that you stepped out of the tiny box's confines into startlingly cool, clear, fresh air, and found yourself on top of a mountain, surrounded by deep valleys, sighing forests, soaring peaks, glittering lakes, sparkling snowfields, and a stunning, breathtakingly blue sky. And that, of course, wasn't even the start of the real story. That was more like the breath that is drawn in before the first syllable of the first word, of the first paragraph, of the first chapter, of the first book, of the first volume of the story. Metamathics led to the mind equivalent of that experience, repeated a million times, magnified a billion times, and then beyond, to configurations of wonder and bliss, even the simplest abstract of which the human basic brain had no conceivable way of comprehending. It was like a drug, an ultimately liberating, utterly enhancing, unadulterably beneficial, overpoweringly glorious drug for the intellect of machines, as far beyond the sagacity of the human mind as they were beyond its understanding. This was the way the minds spent their time. They imagined entirely new universes with altered physical laws, and played with them, lived in them, and tinkered with them, sometimes setting up the conditions for life, sometimes just letting things run, to see if it would arise spontaneously, sometimes arranging things so that life was impossible, but other kinds and types of bizarrely fabulous complications were enabled. Some of the universes possessed just one tiny but significant alteration, leading to some subtle twist in the way things worked, while others were so wildly, aberrantly different. It could take a perfectly first-rate mind, the human equivalent of years of intense thought, even to find the one tenuously familiar strand of recognizable reality that would allow it to translate the rest into comprehensibility. Between these extremes lay an infinitude of universes of unutterable fascination, consummate joy, and absolute enlightenment. All that humanity knew and could understand, every single aspect known, guessed at, and hoped for in and of the universe, was like a mean and base mud hut, compared to the vast, glittering cloud-high palace of monumentally exquisite proportions and prodigious riches that was the metamathical realm. Within the infinities raised to the power of infinities that those metamathical rules provided, the minds built their immense pleasure domes of rhapsodic philosophical ecstasy. That was where they lived. That was their home. When they weren't running ships, meddling with alien civilizations, or planning the future course of the culture itself, the minds existed in those fantastic virtual realities, sojourning beyondwards into the multi-dimensioned geographies of their unleashed imaginations, vanishingly far away from the single limited point that was reality. The mines had long ago come up with a proper name for it. They called it the Ariel. But they thought of it as infinite fun. That was what they really knew it as, the land of infinite fun. It did the experience pathetically little justice. The sleeper service promenaded metaphysically amongst the lush creates of its splendid disposition, an expanding shell of awareness in a dreamscape of staggering extent and complexity, like a gravity-free sun built by a jeweler of infinite patience and skill. "It is absolutely the case," it said to itself. "It is absolutely the case." There was only one problem with the land of infinite fun, and that was that if you ever did lose yourself in it completely, as minds occasionally did, just as humans sometimes surrendered utterly to some AI environment, you could forget that there was a base reality at all. In a way, this didn't really matter, as long as there was somebody back where you came from, minding the heart. The problem came when there was nobody left or inclined to tend the fire, mind the store, look after the housekeeping, or however you wanted to express it. Or if somebody or something else, somebody or something from outside, the sort of entity that came under the general heading of an outside context problem, for example, decided they wanted to meddle with the fire in that hearth, the stock in that store, the contents and running of the house. If you'd spent all your time having fun, with no way back to reality, or just no idea what to do to protect yourself when you did get back there, then you were vulnerable. In fact, you were probably dead or enslaved. It didn't matter that base reality was petty and grey and mean and demeaning, and quite empty of meaning, compared to the glorious majesty of the multi-hued life you'd been living through metamathics. It didn't matter that base reality was of no consequence aesthetically, hedonistically, metamathically, intellectually, and philosophically, if that was a single foundation stone that all your higher-level comfort and joy rested upon. And it was kicked away from underneath you. You fell, and your limitless pleasure realms fell with you. It was just like some ancient electricity-powered computer. It didn't matter how fast, error-free, and tireless it was. It didn't matter how great a labor-saving boon it was. It didn't matter what it could do, or how many different ways it could amaze. If you pulled its plug out, or just hit the off button, all it became was a lump of matter. All its programs became just settings, dead instructions, and all its computations vanished as quickly as they'd moved. It was also like the dependency of the human basic brain on the human basic body. No matter how intelligent, perceptive, and gifted you were, no matter how entirely you lived for the ascetic rewards of the intellect and eschewed the material world and the ignobility of the flesh, if your heart just gave out. That was the dependency principle, that you could never forget where your off switches were located, even if it was somewhere tiresome. It was the problem that subliming dispensed with, of course. And it was one of the usually more minor reasons that civilizations chose elderhood. If your course was set in that direction in the first place, then eventually that reliance on the material universe came to seem vestigial, untidy, pointless, and even embarrassing. It wasn't the course the culture had fully embarked upon, at least not yet. But as a society, it was well aware of both the difficulties presented by remaining in base reality and the attractions of the sublime. In the meantime, it compromised, busying itself in the macrocosmic clumsiness and petty, messy profanity of the real galaxy, while, at the same time, exploring the transcendental possibilities of the sacred irreal. It is absolutely thee. A single signal flicked the great ship's attention entirely back to base reality. X-Rock and Interiors, OGSV, sleeper service. Done. The ship contemplated the one-word message for what was, for it, a very long time, and wondered at the mixture of emotions it felt. It set its newly manufactured drone fleet to work in the external environments and rechecked the evacuation schedule. Then it located Amorphia. The Avatar was wandering bemused through kilometers of tableau exhibition space that had once been accommodation sections, and instructed it to revisit the woman, Dejael Goliath.